in this episode.
You know, anyone listening, maybe you're married, maybe you've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a fiance or a partner that you just really, really love. Well, there was a point in your life where you didn't know that person. And maybe there was a moment where you were afraid to express how you felt about them. Maybe you were afraid to ask them out. Well, if you're really happy with your relationship now, are you happy that you moved through that fear? Are you happy that you did? And it's like, yeah, because the fear of what if they say no pales in comparison to what if they say yes?
Learn to perform. Practical lessons so that you can immediately learn to optimize your health, happiness, and performance. Welcome to another episode of Learn to Perform. I'm your host, Braden Ostepchuk, and with me today is a special guest. I have Dr. Jamil Syaj, who is an international life, business, and relationship coach, integrative naturopathic physician, master neurolinguistic programming practitioner, and the author of 20 Steps to Your Next Breakthrough. He works with leaders and high performers from all walks of life, including world champion athletes, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, business professionals, and more to create an extraordinary life without regret. So Jamil, there are so many things that we can go into today, and I'm super excited to have you on the show to talk to you. But thank you so much for carving out some time to talk with me today.
Absolutely, Braden. Thank you so much for this opportunity and the privilege to be with you and your listeners. Hope everyone who's listening is doing well and that ideally you're even better after you hear this.
Exactly. That's the whole purpose of it, right? Ideally even better. Now, before we hopped on this call, so a full disclosure to the listeners is we quickly discussed your introduction and we decided that I was going to do a very, very brief overview because I think, and after talking to you previously, the best way for the listeners to get to know you and your work and why you can help people and what your purpose is to share a little bit about your story. And I don't think that should come from me. So I would love if you don't mind taking however much time you need to share a little bit of a background on your life, what led you to this point. And what is the purpose that you're going for with your coaching and your teaching that you're doing for people?
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Yeah, I will do that. And so for me, you know, in regards to why I do what I do, it really stems from an experience I had personally with my father in my family. And so when I was 19 years old, my dad had a brain aneurysm. And if anyone's listening and they're not familiar with what that is, imagine one of the blood vessels in the brain, think of it like a tube, and it starts to balloon out. And if you're fortunate, you have a really bad headache and you go to the hospital, you get it taken care of and you're okay. With my dad, he wasn't as fortunate. And so his aneurysm ruptured. And so he was sent to the ER. He was in this 4-hour brain surgery. And in that experience, you know, you could imagine, you know, waiting for 4 hours to see, you know, if your dad or in this, if you're listening and this is similar to what you've been through, your loved one is, you know, are they going to make it? Are they not going to make it? And we were really fortunate that he survived the surgery. Now, we were told that his chances of survival were less than 5%. And it was the worst aneurysm the neurosurgeon said he ever saw. And he survived, but we were told that if he did survive, he'd probably not wake up. And I remember walking into the room after his operation or the surgery, and he was in a coma. And in that moment, there were these two emotions that I were feeling. The first was this feeling of helplessness. I wanted to do something. I wanted to be able to improve his odds in whatever way I could. But in that moment, other than just praying, it didn't really feel like I could do anything. I was just kind of watching and waiting. And the secondary emotion, which really shifted my whole life, was this immense sense of regret. And I had felt that I had taken my relationship with my dad for granted. And I felt that I bought into this false kind of belief that I have time. You know, I'm 19, he's 49. I have at least like, you know, 30, 40, 50 more years with him. And so my priorities at the time, like many people, you know, when I was 19, my age, it was my school. I was a track athlete. So it was my friends. It was working out. It was video games. It was movies. Like it wasn't, let me sit with my dad and connect man to man. It wasn't, let me just understand what this guy's all about. And let me just really bond with him in that way. I was fortunate that, you know, I loved him. He loved me. We had dinner together most nights as a family, but we didn't really spend much time together in that way. And in that moment, it felt like I wasn't going to have that chance again. In that moment, it felt like this is it. You know, he's going to pass at any moment, given what I'm being told. And there's this feeling that I messed up. I blew it. I'm not going to have that opportunity. I wish I could, you know, go back and change it. That was like the thought process at the time. And it really was like a day by day, even in the beginning, like moment by moment, you know, type of process of, all right, he's still alive. He's still alive. And ultimately he survived another 3 years. And the thing though was that there were so many lessons that I learned in that time. And he was in a coma for several months. And when he came out of it, he still was in outpatient facilities. He didn't come home for several months after he woke up. And there was a lot of effort that my mom, my sister and I did to do what we could to take care of him. My dad's side of the family, incredibly helpful in that. And there were moments where I had, you know, my highest highs and my lowest lows, you know. On one hand, my prayers were answered. I got to spend 10, 15 hours a day with him. I took several years off after college. This happened when I was a sophomore. I took several years off after college to be one of his primary caregivers. And there were moments where we were boxing together, physical therapy. We both were into music and we'd sing and instruments. It was amazing. And then there were moments where he had short-term memory loss because of the aneurysm. And he also was prone to seizures. And so there were moments where he forgot who I was. There were moments where he would have a 5-minute seizure in my arms and no one else is home. And I had no medical background at the time. And the phone's across the room, so I can't call 911. And he's standing up and I don't want to, you know, let him go. And so there's a lot of scary moments too. And a lot of moments where we almost lost him several times. And I remember throughout that experience, as I said, the first year and a half, especially, I would go to bed wondering, am I going to see my dad tomorrow? You know, or am I going to wake up and he's not there? And I would wake up in the morning and there was kind of like this little bit of a haze of, was that all a dream? And it was this really kind of interesting and weird place to be that I wasn't, you know, used to. And I'd imagine most people aren't. And in that experience, because it was day by day, it really gave me a direct experience of the miracle of the very fact that you're alive. The miracle of today, the miracle of this moment. The fact that every day 150,000 people statistically pass away, they don't wake up. And you weren't one of them if you're listening to this. And if you're fortunate in this sense that many or most of the people that you love also woke up, wow, you know, it's like right from the get-go, you hit the lotto. Right from the get-go, it's an amazing day. But most of us live our lives, and this isn't a judgment, it's more of an observation, in an unconscious way. And so we're not as intentional thinking about it like that. So there's just the taken for granted, oh yeah, of course, like my whole family wakes up. Of course I woke up. But there's going to be a day where that doesn't happen. And if you take it for granted, you know, the quote by Steve Jobs when he gave a commencement speech, I think at Stanford, and he says, if you live your life as if, how does it go again? It's essentially, it's if you live every day as if it could be your last, one day you will be right. You know, that type of idea. And this experience of my dad put me into that moment where not only was I cherishing every day I had with him, because I didn't know how many more I would have, but I started cherishing every day I had with my mom and my sister and my friends and my family and myself, my dog. Like it was just a reverence for life just took over that wasn't there before. And after the 3 years when he passed away, I remember being at his wake and over 7,000 people were there. Wow. And it was a 5-hour wake, and my dad was a family practice physician, but he was also one of the top Elvis impersonators in the world. And music was his passion. And, you know, he would always joke, you know, my colleagues have golf, I have Elvis. And he's like toured with Elvis's actual band, the Jordanaires. Like he's done all these charity things for hospitals and big, beautiful events. And so he had so much life and, you know, so much youthfulness to him. And after he passed away, I remember being at that wake, I shook every single person's hand in 5 hours, and almost everyone said, your dad saved my life.
Wow.
And people were from different countries and cultures and religious backgrounds, and they were asking if they can pray over the casket in different ways. And it was so humbling for me to see the impact that he had and the amount of love that people felt by him and from him. But it also showed me that I had been playing small. It showed me that I was afraid of rejection, that I was so scared that you were going to judge me that I was holding back. And I found in the last, you know, my dad passed 8 years ago. And so in these last 8 years, especially in my business, I've seen so many people who live their life as if they're wearing a mask. And the mask basically is, who do I need to be for you to love me? Who do I need to be enough? Who do I need to be normal, validated, all these kind of things, special. The problem with that is even when you win, you lose. Because when you're wearing the mask, and let's say you're wearing it because you think that's who you need to be for me to love you, well, then even if I give you love, you know, it's not real. Like, you know that I don't know the real you, you know that I'm loving who you're pretending to be.
Right.
And so that sets up this massive regret, usually down the line. And I was doing that. And there was this moment, like a light switch, aha, never again kind of moment. You know, the way I look at life, you know, each of us, one of my favorite words is enthusiasm. And enthusiasm comes from antetheos, or depending on where you look, entheos, and it means the God within. And when you think of it as this like divine light, this divine spark that is you, and when you radiate that out in the world, that is you in such a unique way where nobody will ever mimic that. And yet most of us wear that mask and we're trying to be somebody else because we think we're not good enough. And so from this place of really tuning into that light and radiating that out, knowing that everything that's meant for you will come to you just by you doing that. Like, that was so powerful for me. And as I started to be what I consider my true self, my authentic self, every aspect of my life shifted. And after my dad passed away, you know, I went through a grieving process with myself and my family. And I really was intentional about that. And I came out the other side of that in immense peace and, you know, absolute surrender to it and acceptance. And it was such a, what I would call, spiritual, beautiful experience for me. And again, that also changed me massively, you know, versus where I was before. And after that, I spent about a year, maybe a little bit less, with my family. And at that point, I'd been coaching for several years already, but I always wanted to do medicine as well. And you know, I was definitely inspired by my dad when I was younger to do that, to go that route. And I never really doubted it. I was like, all right, I want to do that. And with my dad's situation, I was like, all right, it's just kind of on the back burner, but I'll get to it. And so after that year, I applied to medical school in Arizona, and I got to go there for 5 years. And, you know, I didn't know about naturopathic medicine until those 3 years of my dad. And anyone who's listening who's not familiar, think of naturopathic medicine in general. It's mind, body, spirit, root cause medicine, in the sense that you come in, any symptoms that you might have, any conditions you might have been diagnosed with, those are symptoms in the sense that something deeper is going on that caused that. You know, for however many months or years or decades your body has been, let's say, out of balance, or it's been being poisoned, environmental toxicities, nutrient deficiencies, whatever the case may be, there's a lot going on in the world today. And those are leading your body into these disease states, or diseased states that we might call. And in naturopathic medicine, it's really getting to the root cause. And that's so much of what my coaching is about, that the philosophy is pretty much one and the same. And prior to that, I had no idea that existed. I was into nutritional medicine, lifestyle medicine. I was helping a lot of people starting at 14 into 19, helping people lose weight, get off their medications, and just feel so much better as their conditions would reverse and their bodies would get healthier. But I was under the mindset of, oh, I'm going to go to a traditional medical school, you know, get my MD, and then I'll just keep studying on my own, like the way I'm doing. And then during those 3 years of my dad, when he was still alive, one of these nights he went to sleep, I'm on the computer, and I heard this physician speak, blew me away with his presentation. And then after his name, it was ND instead of MD. And I didn't know what that was. And I Google it and I find out there's this whole profession in the whole country, and seven of these schools are around. It's accredited. You're a licensed physician in the US in most states. And you know, you can prescribe medications, you learn all the pharmaceutical stuff, but you also learn healing. And I was like, wow, this is exactly what I've been looking for. I just didn't know that existed. And so I applied, I went to school in Arizona, beautiful, you know, maturation process for me, but also just learned so much about myself, about life. And it was just my next chapter. And continued to coach as well, people through their relationships, their business, their mindset, their high performance, all these kind of things, in addition to spirituality. And I've spent, at this point, about 13 years studying all the different world religions and philosophies and yogas and all these wonderful things, and finding kind of that commonality in all of them. And it's been a wonder for me, and just to kind of string them all together, kind of like everything under one roof. And so after I graduated school, I made this decision that I didn't want to practice medicine in the way my colleagues did. Coaching was my primary passion, but I wanted to find a way to still incorporate it. And so, although I do maintain my license and I might practice in the future, but right now, you know, coaching is what I live for. Partnering with people where they show up and they say, hey, you know, I've got certain challenges, I've gotten certain problems, I've got certain goals in my business, in my mindset, in my relationships, in my health, my happiness, my spirituality. It's that full spectrum of the human experience. And there's who they are now, and there's who they could be. There's who they want to be. There's the things they want to have. And that gap, there's something blocking them. There's something in the way. There's who they're not being, what they're not doing, certain thought processes and belief systems that are sabotaging them, certain emotional traumas from when they were a kid that are in their unconscious mind that they're not even aware of that are keeping them sabotaged. And that led me to do further training into neuro-linguistic programming and hypnotherapy and mental emotional release type of techniques. And all of that was just such a beautiful experience, not only for me to grow through, but to get to partner with people. I've been blessed at this point to work with people from around the world, different walks of life, different countries, but they all fall under, in my mind, the category of a leader or a high performer. And when I say that, it's not something that you're born as. It's something that you choose to be. And when you're choosing to be a leader, you're basically saying, I want to make an impact. I want to make a difference. And it's not just about me. It's about we. It's about my family. It's about my company. It's about my community. And depending on the size of your vision, it's about the world, you know, your country, the world. And when I think of a high performer, it's a person who the things that matter most to them, they want to be and do the best they can at it. And those are the people that typically seek me out and that I resonate with the most, and just getting to help them honestly just create miracles in their life. Things that they thought would take 10 years and it takes 6 months. People think, you know, that's not possible for me, or I've had this problem for years. Like one of the clients I'm working with now, you know, she's had some pretty severe emotional traumas throughout her life, especially when she was a kid. And she's seen therapists and she's done all these medications and all these different things, and nothing's worked for her. And I'm taking her through, you know, a combination of hypnosis and this mental emotional release process to release all of these stuck energies and emotions that have been keeping her where she's at. And it's been about 15 hours into the process. The process takes anywhere from 5 to 20 hours. It depends on the person. And she sent me a message yesterday, how she feels amazing. She feels so light, feels like the weight of the world's off her shoulders. And she's finally getting something that works. And so I just feel really blessed that the right trainings, the right opportunities, the right people have come into my life as both mentors, as clients, as friends, to guide me not only in my own healing journey, but I get to learn what I need to know to help others. And so that's kind of where I'm at now. And so I'll pause there and hear anything that you have to share.
Yeah, that's amazing. And this is, for the listeners, exactly why I didn't want to try and introduce you, because your experiences and your background and the practices that you have and your credentials are so vast and diversified. And I love, because it gives you the ability, not just through credentials and through knowledge, but through application and through experience on both sides of the spectrums, on someone who has been able to help other people improve their life, but as someone who's also had to passively watch or experience the pain and the heartbreak. And I'm fortunate that I haven't had any experiences that remotely mimic what you've gone through. But most people in the world, if not yet, at some point, probably all of us to some degree, I would assume all of us will have something like that. And so being aware of that deep emotional connection that we all have to family members or friends or loved ones or our own health, and how important that is to be able to connect, I think there are going to be a lot of people that are really going to be able to resonate with your message, not just with this podcast and this episode, but I know every platform that you've used to reach out, and the more you can reach out, I think it's an incredibly inspiring mission. And this is why I was so excited to have you on and talk to you, because even here, me just sitting, I'm thinking, okay, I'm writing down notes, as you can see, and I'm thinking, okay, I need to be more grateful. Like, I love what you mentioned earlier, is that just the fact that you wake up alive, like you've already hit the lottery. You know, you are already alive and living and have the opportunity to experience so many incredible things, even on the worst day, you know, because there are people who experience their worst days in their lives that still can somehow be grateful. As stories of people, you think, how could they ever be happy? But there are so many things that maybe we do take for granted. And maybe in your case, especially when you were hit with that that challenge, you were 19. Most people at 19 aren't planning to be dealing with major life events or life issues. I mean, most people, even when they get to, let's say, 30 years later, 49, are probably not thinking that, oh, you know, I have to deal with something happened to my parents. I mean, people that could be in their 50s and 60s can be blindsided by, you know, a death of a parent or a relative or anything like that. So I think that's just an incredible background. And you tease so many things that I think we're going to be able to get into a little bit more in this episode. But I just want to, before we dive into some of those little things, I want to quickly maybe more set the table on the whole idea of naturopathic medicine. And it when I'm listening to this, I hear it as being a very holistic approach. You're not just taking, okay, it's just nutrition. We're just going to focus there. It's not even just medicine. It's not even just religious or spirituality. We're literally looking at everything that that is involved in the human condition. Like, you are trying to fully reverse engineer every symptom to its root cause and find the barriers that you can remove so that someone can truly achieve peak living, like a peak experience, optimal experience. And this is what I want to start off with, is defining what optimal living or what peak performance or what true success looks like to you. And I know earlier you'd mentioned the idea of how you found your true self. And it almost, as I was listening to it, sounded like you were almost about to glow with excitement and enthusiasm through the camera, as is like, this is your peak experience. But how do you define for people so they have some sort of North Star? What should I be aiming for if I am going to live a fulfilled life? What does that look like?
Yeah, I love that question. And I think at the core of what I do and that I use to define success, it all comes back to that story with my dad. And the way that I work with people now, which is my definition of success, is to create an extraordinary life without regret. Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind that an extraordinary life is a life on your terms. Nobody else can define that for you. What I consider extraordinary, you may not. And what you consider extraordinary, I may not. That's not what's important. What's important is that that is a life that you look at and go, wow, like, yeah, like, I choose this. Like, this is mine.
Right.
And the without the regret part, that doesn't mean, of course, that, you know, right now I'm 30, let's say, and let's say I passed away at 35 or 32, or I passed away tomorrow. There are things that I would still love to do, right? Right. If you told me, oh, you're going to die tomorrow. Well, my goal is to get to 115, right? And so from that 115 place, there's a lot of life I'd like to live, a lot of traveling I'd like to do, a lot of impact I'd like to have. And if I were to be told, you know, you're going to pass away tomorrow, I can still have no regret. Because I can look at the life that I lived thus far. I can look at the people that I care about and I can ask myself, have I shown my love and my care? Like, do they know how I feel about them? As I look at all of the opportunities that have been presented to me, especially, you know, in the recent times, have I chosen to step forth despite fear because I'm doing it from a place of love and self-mastery and courage? Or am I living from a place of fear? When people fear death, a big aspect of it is because they know deep down that they're not really living. Mm. When you know that you're basically living your life from this place of, I'll do it tomorrow, this procrastination kind of place, when you know that you're kind of putting off all these experiences for later, then the idea that you could die like anytime, like imminently, is horrifying, because there's this thing of, but then I won't get to do all these things. You know, it's like, I think it's like Warren Buffett. It was, I'm going to paraphrase this, but it was really funny. He said something like, saving all of your money to invest when you retire is something like, you know, saving, it's something like saving sex for old age or something like that. It was really funny. It was like, right. I'm paraphrasing how he said it. People can look it up if they're interested. But the point being, when you're living your life like on hold, you know, the people who truly live now, and that doesn't mean being reckless, that doesn't mean like no care, YOLO, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but it's coming from this place of, you have a plan for your future. You have a plan of, let's say, what interests you, what you want. You might not even, it might be hyper specific, or it might not be, you might not know yet, but you have a general, let's say, idea. You know, this is a direction that seems interesting. This is something that seems to be calling to me. I'm not really sure why, but that direction seems to be pretty good for me. But then you come back to this moment, and I always share with people, you know, focus on winning the day. Don't get lost in the macro, in the vision, because then usually that leads to some type of discouragement or depression because I'm still so far away from it. But if you get clear on where you're headed, you do your planning, and then you come back into this moment and you live in this present moment as beautifully as possible. When you make this moment as beautifully as possible, the future is created by this moment. So this moment feeds into the next one. And that moment will take the beauty from the last one. And so most of us, you know, we don't live that way. I wasn't living that way for such a long time. And again, that extraordinary life without regret, coupled with knowing who you are and being that. Hmm. If you just did those two things, to me, that's success.
Yeah, that's powerful. And that there's something I really want to tap into here. And this isn't exactly what I had planned for this conversation to go, but I want to dive into it right now because it's coming to my mind, is the concept of fear and how fear is such a powerful barrier to so many things we accomplish in life. And the context that I'm first thinking of this, which is still potentially very narrow-minded, is something that I've become really fascinated with recently, is trying to understand flow states and trying to understand transcendence and human consciousness, but then also the idea of ego and how that all ties in and how we create our ego. And there's kind of these thoughts where, as I've been peeling it back apart, trying to peel back the onion of trying to understand how can you transcend consciousness and achieve true presence. Like you had said, if you want to bring it back, your macro goals, into the true present, you want to truly be in this moment and truly be grateful and truly live. There's so many times, and I know I can experience it, or I can speak firsthand from my experiences, is that the ego holds you back. Because like you said, maybe you're worried what someone else thinks of you. So you're afraid of being judged a certain way. Perhaps you're afraid of failure, but then the ultimate fear may be a fear of death. But really, if you are afraid of death, and you can share your thoughts on this after, I always kind of think of that now as being really just a fear of a loss of identity, which comes back to your ego. Because what are we most afraid about? Are we afraid about no longer existing as an entity on earth? Or are we afraid about our ego, our persona that we have created over our lifetime will no longer exist and will no longer fit in with our interpretation of society or our family or our friends or our goals in the world? So it comes back to so many ways of having this fear. But if you can transcend your ego, if you can somehow find ways to work through those ego barriers, and maybe this is part of your reverse engineering approach to like, what is your barrier? Is your barrier psychological with your ego? Or is it vice versa? But how big of a role does fear really play? And what are some ways that we can learn to better understand the mechanisms of fear? Because this is something I don't really understand. I understand maybe the very basics of, oh, there's a stress response. So the amygdala lights up if I see a bear running at me. Okay, that's fear. That makes sense to me. But beyond that, you know, and then you have a lot of experience with people where we go back to past trauma. So potentially psychological trauma from when you're a child, that a lot of that is probably rooted in fear of the future based on experiences of the past. Like, is fear as big of an issue? Is it really one of the dominant threats that you think maybe keeps people from truly living? And what are some ways that we can maybe think about it or understand it or how to approach it? And this isn't a planned interview question. This is generally me just speaking off the top of my head, because these are questions that I have been wrestling with for a while now, and I would love to get your thoughts on them.
Yeah. So I would say, kind of in terms of like a big picture, and yes, in my opinion, fear is the primary factor that holds people back. But understanding, and it'll make sense why I say that in a moment, there are two different types of fear. You know, there's rational fears and irrational fears.
Okay.
Rational fears are what you just said, you know, like the bear is coming at you. That makes right. sense that your body is going into a fight or flight, sympathetic right. overdrive kind of response, because the body's trying to survive, you know?
Yeah. Thankful for that response. We're very thankful.
Yeah. You're walking down the street and you're around the corner and there's a snake on the floor and you like jump back. You could love snakes, but that could catch you off guard, right? And you jump right. back because your body's kind of conditioned to just survive, right? So those make perfect sense. You know, jumping out of a plane without a parachute, you probably should be afraid of that, you know? And like, you know, but when we then get into the realm of irrational fear is, you know, I'm afraid to tell this person how I feel about them because what if they don't feel the same way? Hmm. I'm afraid to give that talk in public because what if people laugh at me and then that means I'm dead, like I die, right?
Right.
And now there are some genuine concerns from the, like, if you want to really make it like practical from the perspective of your reputation and things like that. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of fear that we deal with is not rational fear. It's irrational fear. And the challenge there is the fear that you feel is real, but the cause that you're attributing to that fear is not. You are only ever feeling your thinking. Hmm. Your fear is based on the thoughts that you're kind of bringing up in your mind, the stories that you're telling yourself. So as an example, well, if I put myself out there and I be myself, let's say I'm afraid of doing that. And let's say I do it. I take a chance. I put myself out there. I'm the real me. I start acting maybe a little bit goofy. I start doing this. And then certain people don't like it. And certain people start laughing at me. well, if that happens, I couldn't live with that. And if that happens, that means that people don't like me. That means I'm not good enough. That means that nobody wants to see the real me. And that means that in order for me to be accepted, I need to just, you know, put the mask on and just act the way everyone else acts. All that was just a thought in my mind. Right. None of that was real. But I'm going to live as if that's real. And so because I live as if that's real, I will experience the fear. You know, the story I can share here is the first time I ever got to speak publicly, there was about 200 people in the audience. And I had been prepped. It was a 10-minute presentation. And there was a bunch of people that were going to be doing 10-minute presentations also. And the week or two prior, I was preparing for it. And I had it down cold. You know, I was so confident with it. Never done it before, but I was so confident with it because I was rehearsing it. I knew it. The night before, I just ran through it 6, 7, 10 times, no issues, perfect flow. Like it was like unconscious at that point, right? I'm not even thinking about the words, it's just there. And then I'm in the 700 square foot apartment in Arizona. I got my IKEA futon and I close my eyes and I say, all right, when I open my eyes, I'm going to imagine 200 people on this couch staring at me. And then I'm going to give the presentation. And so I sat there for a second. I visualized it. I saw it. And then I open my eyes. I see them. And then I start. Within about 5 seconds, heart starts pounding, hands start sweating. I forget the entire presentation. Now, no one else is in that room. Why did I forget the presentation? Oh, I got nervous. Why did I get nervous? No one else is in the room. Because right. Your brain doesn't know the difference between what you imagine and what you've actually experienced. Right. And so your brain, think of it like it's in this dark prison of a skull. And the only way the brain knows what's going on out there is your senses and your thoughts. That's it. And so when I visualize, well, I see them, there they are. And then I tell myself, this is real. They're there. They're going to judge me. They're going to all this. Then my heart starts pounding. I go into that sympathetic fight or flight state, which is not conducive to peak performance. Anything that increases tension drops your performance level. So I was like amazed going, wow, this is incredible how I just forgot the whole thing staring at a blank couch.
Right.
And then I took that experience and I started playing with it where I said, all right, let me take a second, let me breathe a little bit, and let me start again, imagining all the people. Each time got a little bit easier. And then I started having a lot of fun. I was like pointing to the wall, like imaginary people that I was looking at and like kind of asking questions to the audience. And I was like laughing and making fun of things. And it was great. And to the point where I got so comfortable with it. The next day I went out to do the presentation and it was incredible. And people came up after like, oh my God, that was awesome. How many times have you done this? Well, technically I've never done it before, but I've actually done it like 50 times before. Because right. I didn't have time. And people who focus on peak performance, they do something called mental rehearsal, where they imagine doing something as ideally and optimally as they possibly could. And then if you want to make it even more powerful, they imagine something going wrong. They imagine something happening that they didn't expect. And then they see themselves dealing with that. And sometimes you want to have fun with it. You can make whatever happens really bad. All right, I'm giving this presentation. And then the whole building has a blackout. And I need to keep doing it. Right. And so, but if I visualize that, that might terrify somebody, the possibility that that could happen.
Right.
But what if you were to play with that? Like in the book that I wrote, that's one of the first chapters, this idea of you have a goal. And then you come up with what potentially could get in the way of that. And then you solve that in your mind of what you would do. So now in the, and you do that as many times as you can. And so let's say you've come up with 50 different kind of contingency plans. If this happens, I'll do that. If this happens, I'll do that. Now you can't plan for everything, but at the end of the day, you're going to hit the big ones that are probably going to happen. And you'll exactly know like how to bounce back from it because now it's part of the plan.
Right.
And so it's just this interesting thing. So bringing it back full circle, I share that story because in that moment, it was a completely irrational fear. Now, at the same time, we live in this body, let's say, that's millions of years old. And from that place, back in the day, if you got ostracized or shunned from your tribe, you're probably going to die because you're right. Alone. And, you know, there's strength in numbers when you're in the middle of a jungle somewhere and there's like jaguars and lions around, you know? But if you're by yourself, that's really dangerous. And most of the time, that is a death sentence for you to get sent away. And so we still have that going on. But the thing is, we don't live in a world like that really anymore. But your brain still kind of thinks you do. And so it's kind of balancing in a one way. It's a rational fear in the history of the earth. Yes. Your fear to put yourself out there is a very rational fear, but in recent history, the life that you will live in, the life that you have lived in and are living in, it's not a rational fear. You are hurting your potential success by having fears that are not logical, not rational. You know, what's the worst that can happen if I put myself out there? All right, I forget the words, I mess up, but then the next time I'll do even better. And then I'll get better, I'll be more comfortable. I'll be more comfortable. You know, iterations, trial and error. Most of the time we're afraid to put ourselves out there. We're afraid to try, so we don't create the success that we want. You know, anyone listening, maybe you're married, maybe you've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a fiance or a partner that you just really, really love. Well, there was a point in your life where you didn't know that person. And maybe there was a moment where you were afraid to express how you felt about them. Maybe you were afraid to ask them out. Well, if you're really happy with your relationship now, are you happy that you moved through that fear? Are you happy that you did? And it's like, yeah, because the fear of what if they say no pales in comparison to what if they say yes?
Right.
You know, if they say no, then all right, it hurts for a few seconds and then you move on. And then at least you have clarity now that that person's not into me. I'll go spend my time looking for somebody else. Instead of, you know, if they would have said, if, like, let's say I'd never asked, but if I did, I'll give you a client story of mine. There was a person in this exact situation. He was really interested in this woman, and, you know, he tells me about her, and I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. You know, do you know her? And he's like, oh no, I don't. I'm like, do you want to go talk to her? And he said, no, you know, she wouldn't be into me. And, you know, she probably has a boyfriend and this. Notice he doesn't know her. So he's making all that up.
Right. Yeah. That's all self-imposed and self-constructed.
Yeah. Yeah. And we do that. And, you know, side tangent, we do that with everything. Oh yeah. You know, they wouldn't like me. I'm not good enough for that. Like, these are just stories that we make up. And so he's like, oh yeah, you know, she probably wouldn't like me. She probably has a boyfriend, all this kind of stuff. And basically, you know, how do you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you can sit with that and you realize I don't, then it's just afraid of rejection. But the reality is rejection doesn't exist. Rejection is a concept. There is no rejection. There's yes and there's no. And if you want to say there's maybe, but let's say there's yes and there's no. No is not rejection. No just means no. No one's rejecting you. They're just saying, you know, this isn't for me.
Right.
You get to choose what no means. You know, there's a little acronym like no is next opportunity, right? Depending on how you want to look at it, you can just move on from the no. But if you make it mean something about you, oh, she said, he said no to me, which means that nobody wants to go out with me, which means that I'm not going to put myself out there anymore. What's the point? Mm-hmm. That is like you just blew up that no and turned it into like a no for your life, which mean like the next person that you would have met would have been a yes, right? It's like, so that kind of thing. So going back to this client, he tells me about this woman, and I basically take him through this guided visualization where I have him imagine there he is. He approaches the girl. She's seen him before. He's really nervous. He kind of stammers a little bit, and he tells her, you know, basically that he, you know, he asked her out, and they connect a little bit. And in this visual, I have her think that, you know, his approach was cute, and she acknowledged the fact that he took the chance to approach, and that it took some courage to do that because she could tell he's afraid. And then they go on a date, and the date went really well. And then I just kind of kept building it up and fast forwarding. Now they're dating for a couple months, a year. They're engaged, they're married. Then their life, and I knew what he wanted because he was a client of mine. So we talked about all that stuff in the past. So I built her into it and this beautiful life. And then at the end of the visual, there they are on the rocking chair, 90-something years old, holding hands. And he looks at her and he says, I am so, you know, grateful and appreciative for you. I love you so much. You want to hear something crazy? I almost didn't ask you out because I was afraid that, you know, you had a boyfriend or that you wouldn't like me. And I'm so glad that I took that chance because it was the greatest decision I ever made. Then I bring him back to this moment and he opens his eyes and I say, is the possibility that that could be real worth the chance that you might say no?
Right. You really think about things a lot differently.
Yeah. He went right over to her. Asked her out. They are engaged to be married right now.
Wow. So they're as I say on this the story, path.
Because I told them that, like, that was like 6 years ago. They're engaged to be married I'm going to the wedding. Right. And so my point being, that applies to anything. You know, you have a business idea, you've got something that's a calling that you've wanted to do, you want to travel somewhere. Of course, there's the practical side of it. You know, a certain amount of money is required, there's certain steps you need to take. Is it the right time for you right now? Sometimes it legitimately isn't. But most of the time, we just buy into the story of fear and we use that to procrastinate our life, to just stay safe, not realizing that coming from fear is the most unsafe thing you can do in the grand scheme of your life, because you are playing so small that all of the magic and wonder that is there for you in this lifetime, you'll never experience it. And so to me, it's like in my life, that was not a risk I was worth taking, or willing to take rather. You get to determine in your own life, am I okay with playing small? Am I okay with living from fear? Am I okay with holding back? Am I okay with if my highest potential is a 10 and I'm playing at a 3 and that's cool with me, then you do you. There's no judgment. There's no way you're supposed to be. But from that place, that at least the people that I work with, the people that resonate with me, they want that 10. And if they're playing at a 4 or they're playing at a 6, you know, I help them close that gap. And a big aspect of it does come from that fear place.
Right. And if someone wants to be at a 10 and they end up less than a 10, that is just setting them up for regret, which could almost be another thing that you could be afraid of. But it's like you had talked about at the start, your definition, create an extraordinary life without regret. But if we allow ourselves to give in to the fear, we allow ourselves to justify our excuses and, you know, maybe our preconceived notions that, oh, well, it's probably not going to happen, so it's easier to stay here. You know, the trade-off is that, yeah, okay, maybe now you don't have to face the fear, which might suck because, you know, fear is hard. It's hard to overcome certain barriers. But are you going to be content when you get down the road and you say, man, I should have done that, or I should have done that, or what if, like that's kind of a painful thought to think about down the road. What if, and hop in here.
And that's the thing too, you know, in the last 8 years or so, you know, I've been coaching now for 16 years as of this year. And with that work coupled with my family experience and with people that I've met, there are people that I've met that are like 70, 80, 90, and you can just see it on their face that they're not happy. And then when you speak with them, they carry with them this regret of, you know, I really wish I had done things differently. I wish that I had lived my life instead of other people's versions of my life, other people's expectations of my life. Because you're living your life for you. You know, you're the center of your life. You're the one who has to deal with the consequences of your choices. And so when you do something for somebody else, because they want you to do it, but it's not in alignment for you, saying no is actually the most loving thing you can do for you and for them. But let's say these people didn't do that. So they're 70, 80, 90, and they've got this immense regret. Then there's the people on the other side of the spectrum that are teenagers, 20s and 30s, let's say. And they're coming from this place of there's so much expectation and pressure put on them to be a certain way, take a certain job, focusing on money, focusing on all this stuff, that happiness and fulfillment are like not on the radar at all. And so they're going into things that they don't want to do because dad wants me to do it, or mom wants me to do it, or this is what my family does, or this is what society's expecting, or, you know, this is the family business, even though you hate the family business, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's the expectation that if I don't do that, like my parents are going to hate me at the store, right? And so we buy into that. And then there's people in the middle, 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and they get into something, and this is like, I'm making big generalizations here. These are all the people that, let's say, have regret. They get into something and they've been doing it for maybe years or decades and they don't like it. But the perspective is, oh, well, you know, it pays well, or it pays relatively well enough. And I'm not really passionate about anything. And so I'm just going to stay in this until maybe I retire. Or I'll stay in this until I find something better, but they're not looking for anything better, right? So it's kind of like, I'll stay in this until something just pops up on my lap. That could happen, but it's unlikely. And keep in mind, that's not, some people hear that and they say, you don't understand, like I got 2 jobs, I've got 3 jobs, I'm in a really difficult situation, I've got a family, I've got kids, I'm a single parent. I hear you and I respect all that. I don't put any of that down. But I also wanted to just open you up to the possibility that other people have been in a similar situation and or almost the exact situation. No one's got the exact situation as you, right? But
right.
Similar enough situations, and they found a way to pull that off. You know, some people talk about Maybe you've got a 9 to 5 and then maybe you even have another job, but you might have an hour. You might have 2 hours. You might have 4 hours free. And if you really hate that job and there's something that you really love, you could put some or all of those hours that are free into the building of that business on the side while you're getting the money to pay your bills. There's going to be a sacrifice. But when you sacrifice in the short term to create that long term, I have found that to be something that in my life has paid off immensely. But in the people that I've coached, most of my clients are, some are in their 30s, but most of them are between 40 and 70. And, you know, just because you can't go all in on what you love immediately, that doesn't mean it's not worth it. It means it might take you a couple months. It might take you a year. It might take you a couple years to get to a point where you can offset the money that you were making from your job that you didn't like and get it from your passion project. But, you know, the time is going to pass anyway. So if you love it and you would do it anyway and you would do it for free and you probably have been doing it for free, why not put the time in so a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you can actually be doing that full time for money versus, you know, still having that job you hate and thinking it's not possible for you to work the other job. Again, these are all kind of specific things, but I want to just bring us back to 30,000 feet. Pay attention to the stories that you're buying into. There are thoughts that you tell yourself that you just take as true and you don't question them. That's what causes so much of your pain, your suffering, your misery. Unquestioned thought. Because most of the time, what you're thinking isn't true, or at least it's not completely true. And when you buy into it as if it is, you're living in a fantasy. Your experience is real. Your emotional reality is real, but it's not based on something that's real.
Right.
And that's just a very different place to come from, because once we see it for what it really is, it unravels. You know, the problem disappears because it really never existed in the first place. When a problem is, think about this, there's two types of problems. There are logistical problems. I want to buy that house. It requires a certain amount of money. I don't have that money.
Right.
Right. So the problem, not from a like bad thing perspective, but problem as like a math problem. Right. It's just something to solve. Right. So I don't have the money yet, and I'm going to figure out a way to get it, whether it's through a bank or through whatever, I'll find a way to get it. That's a logistical problem. It exists out in the world. Right. But most of our problems are made of thought, and they're mental, they're emotional. And when we recognize that, they can go away immediately with nothing changing in the outside world because it shifts the way we relate to it. Our thinking changes about it, so it's no longer a problem. And when I'm working with my clients and I'm coaching them, that's the bulk of the work. You know, there is accountability. There is, you've got this goal, like here's some systems and some strategies. But oftentimes people join and they sign up thinking that like that's what's missing.
Right.
That's like 10% of it, 5% of it, because 90% of it is you just getting in your own way. 90% of it is you believing what's not true. 90% of it is you just not coming from a place that's grounded in reality of how the world actually works. And there's a lot of psychology that goes into that and like the understanding of it, but it's a lot simpler than it seems, especially when people have a conversation about it. And so I'll pause there.
Yeah, so it definitely is. It that's a great summary and a great explanation. I think it helps put into context of why it matters and how your thought patterns can affect and how your mindset, you know, can affect so many things downstream in your life. But if we're going to think about this, and one thing that comes to mind is when I started learning to be more mindful, and I was working with a sports psychologist back when I was playing hockey to practice mindfulness and then meditation. And I was trying to figure out how could I better control my mind and my thoughts? Because in my career, I felt my biggest barrier to performance was my insecurity, my fear of failure, my fear of being judged or criticized by my teammates or my coaches. And I would get in my head and I wouldn't be able to get in flow states. I wouldn't truly be able to get focused. Not all the time. Obviously, this is speaking again in generalities, but a lot of the time, my biggest barrier in my honest self-reflection to my success in my hockey career was that I would be overthinking and overanalyzing everything. And I wasn't that I was overanalyzing the game. So, you know, I was a goalie. It wasn't that I was overanalyzing the play and how it happened and the mechanisms that led to me getting scored on. It was overanalyzing, how is this going to affect my life? What am I going to get to play the next game? Is the coach going to bench me? Am I going to get cut or am I going to get traded? Or like, what does this mean for me if I no longer have a place to play? And then I've spent my whole life trying to be a hockey player and my identity is gone and et cetera, et cetera. So this is all in my head. right? And then as I started practicing more mindfulness and working with the psychologist who helped me a ton, you know, I started realizing, okay, maybe be more mindful. Like, wait a minute, I'm agitated right now. And then why? Or, and it just be these random times during the day, or, you know what, I'm happy right now. Why? And you start noticing these things. But that was a process. And even now, I mean, I'm still on the process of trying to meditate every day and trying to be more in tune with my thoughts and my patterns and try and dig deeper to the root of why do I feel a certain way or why not. But that's taken months and years. And even then, most of the time we get so caught up in our thoughts and our train of thoughts, and they're wired through decades of life, depending on how maybe we grow up and how we're trained ourselves to think. So if you have people that have gone through, let's say, 3, 4, 5 plus decades of thinking a certain way, like, how can people think about this, or people that listen to this episode think, okay, you know what, maybe there's something really of value here and I need to take more time to reflect on these self-imposed barriers that I'm creating in my mind. But how do I catch myself? How do I create the awareness of, wait a minute, I shouldn't be thinking this, or why am I thinking this? You know, not necessarily judgment, but just observing. How do we actually become aware of these thoughts? Because most of them just go, they're in automatic pilot mode and we don't even know we're thinking these thoughts. So how do we actually become aware of what's going on in our brain?
Yeah, I want to preface it with something that you were sharing. So as an example, in sports, you said you were a goalie. Let's say somebody scores on you, right? Mm-hmm. So you missed the last one that came your way.
Right.
What does that have to do with the next one that's coming your way?
Oh, nothing, but it's very hard to convince yourself that it doesn't.
and notice that when you do get lost and, oh my God, I missed it. If I miss the next one, coach is going to bench me. This is going to happen. This is going to happen. Now, that could be true. If you miss the next one, coach might bench you, right?
Right.
But it won't be forever. And the point also is, just thinking that, for most people, it's not everybody, but for most people, that would actually increase the likelihood that they're going to miss the next one.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I can just quickly speak from experience. The days where I would be able to control my thoughts and be able to stay present and say, okay, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. It's in the past. It's gone forever. You know, kind of the stoic mindset, and just be truly focused on, okay, the next shot, and that's it. And just truly be in the moment. Those days I could overcome bad starts, bad plays, bad experiences. And that's when I would really feel I'd perform peak. But not every day was I able to do that. And there were a lot of days where I recall where I got in my head and I couldn't break out of that feedback loop of what if, and how I was going to deteriorate, you know, my entire existence as a human being on earth, because you know how we like to exaggerate things. And those days, almost certainly, those tanked really fast as soon as you lose that space. So in my experience, exactly what you said, I lived it.
Yeah. You know, in baseball, there's the Babe Ruth quote, you know, every strikeout brings me one step closer to my next home run. And, you know, if you're the baseball player and you, let's say, are going to go up at bat 3 or 4 times that game, if you strike out the first two, and now the whole time you're in the dugout getting ready to go up again the third time, you're thinking of the first two. And as you're approaching the plate with the bat, you're thinking, I better not strike out this time. I really can't strike out this time. All your focus is in striking out. Right. And so when you get up there and the pitcher's getting ready to wind up, you're not present watching the pitcher, watching the ball. You're in your head thinking about not striking out. So then you're likely going to strike out. Like, you have a way higher chance of striking out than if you were just present. And so the very thing that you're thinking about as if it's helping is causing the problem.
Right.
And when we can, and you said earlier, the question was basically, how do we raise awareness to the point where we can shift that thinking? Let's say the initial aspect of it is slow down. Like, there's no rush. You're going 1,000,000 miles an hour in your head. You know, slow down and really start being present with what's going on in front of you. When you're present and you're not in your mind like that, you know, it's like, I like to think of it like, I had a client a few weeks, 2 weeks ago, and he said to me, how do I experience, initially when he came to me, he asked for, I want to just experience more spirituality in my life, right? But then when we dove into that, what it really was is, I want an experience of feeling truly alive. And my recipe that I kind of came up in the moment for that, increase your level of presence and engagement in whatever you're doing. Like, throw yourself into it with everything you have. You could be doing the dishes. You could be in the middle of the hockey game. You could be with your spouse or your partner. You could be painting. You could be singing. Whatever you're doing, if you put everything you've got into it, all your presence, all your engagement, you hold nothing back, your mind starts to stop because you're in that flow state. You just show up. You're just present. You're there. And so oftentimes, you know, you can have an experience of that where, like for me, you know, I love to sing. And when I was younger, I was really nervous about that. And I was so afraid. This is before, you know, when I was younger and I cared a lot about the rejection. What are you going to think? And what ended up happening was gradually I would start to sing when I was 15, 16, 17. And initially it was just, I'm just going to sing just to get through it. Everyone's asking for it at the family party or whatever. So I'm just going to sing and I'm not really trying to do a good job. I'm just trying to do it. So I'm really in my head the whole time, just thinking about, oh my God, I probably sound like crap right now. Oh my God, like that person's looking at me. But notice that that's taking away from my performance massively. And when I started to think, you know what, if I'm going to do it, and the very fear is that what if I do it badly is actually causing me to do it badly, that I'm just going to literally, if they ask me to sing, I'm just going to pick the song and just belt it. I'm going to sing the song and just go all into it as if, like, if it wasn't amazing, I'd be killed. And that made it where I started to have so much fun, you know, singing, and other people were like, wow, that was amazing. And these are people that heard me sing before. And they were like, I didn't know you could sing like that. It's because I wasn't doing it before. But once I did that, the thing I was afraid of became fun. You know, if you're afraid of something, the way out is action. The way out is to go through it.
Right.
And so when you're in that place of fear, when you're in your thoughts, when you're just lost in your head, you slow down. Maybe you take a couple nice deep breaths. You hone in on your breathing, which is a great way to presence yourself. And then what's the task at hand? Like, what is it that I want to do right now? And just fully engage yourself in it. And just doing that, I have found to be really powerful. And you also said something to the degree of, what if you've been in this like way of thinking for like decades, let's say, right?
Right.
Or even just years. The amount of time doesn't really matter. I've had people that I had a guy who smoked for 10 years and he wanted my help quitting. We had a two hour conversation. He hasn't smoked in like 8 years.
Wow.
It didn't matter that he's been smoking for 10 years. It didn't matter that he's been trying to quit. Because when you help somebody really see what's going on, it's a lot easier. As an example, when you walk up to a stove and it's red hot and you've never seen a stove before and you touch it and you burn your hand, how many more times do you need to get burned before you recognize it's hot? Don't touch it. If you're most people, you get it the first time. Like, you don't need to learn it again. Like, you got it. You see, you know,
right.
If you were like an alien and you just show up on this planet and you've never seen like night and day, and so it's daytime and this is what you're familiar with. This is what you're used to. This is life. And you're here for a couple hours and you go, okay, this is how it is. And you start to get comfortable. And then all of a sudden, this giant ball in the sky, which everyone just told you is like, this creates life, like, and allows life to live on the earth and everything, starts to go down. And you're like, oh my God, the hell's happening. And then it goes away. And now it's pitch black. And the moon's in the sky. And you're like, what the hell is that? And you're like really afraid because it's pitch black and it's colder and you don't know what's going on. You don't know what night is. And then at some point, you kind of pass out because you're so tired. And then you wake up and the sun's out and you're like, oh my God, what happened? Maybe that was all a dream. But then like the next day, like it happens again. And then at some point it's not scary anymore when the sun goes down and the moon comes up because you know, oh, that's just how it works. Like that's just what this is.
Right.
It's the exact same thing. When somebody can have a habit for decades, but when they really find out why they had that habit, what need it was trying to meet, what it's costing them, and they not just intellectually get it, but they emotionally get it, and they find a better way, it's incredible how quickly change can happen. I tell people often, change happens in an instant, literally like that. It's the process of being ready to change that takes time. Mm. So you might say, I've been trying to change for 30 years. And then let's say you finally just changed. It only took you a second to change. It was 30 years of, I wasn't fully ready yet. It was right. 30 years of, I didn't fully, you know, accept it, or I didn't fully let it go. And I've seen that over and over and over again with all these different habits that people have had, habits of thinking about themselves, habits of smoking and drinking and all these things. And it's really incredible how quickly you can change when you are all into it.
Right. And then to be all in, that is perhaps some of the challenge where we maybe sometimes we need assistance, or maybe sometimes we need help finding the root cause, because, or maybe, you know, we're just scratching at the surface and we're doing the wrong thing. So maybe even if the attempts are genuine, it is still very difficult, because a lot of issues that we face or that we deal with in our lives when we're trying to make changes are very complex or deep rooted in issues that maybe we can't see them. We can't even imagine, or maybe the dots are really, really hard to connect. And let's face it, human health and happiness and spirituality is incredibly complex, and we'll be learners forever about it. Now, we've been going for about an hour, Jamil, so I want to wrap this up, but I would love for you to share, where can people get in touch with you? Because I, you know, I'm sure there's everyone out there to some degree is dealing with some issues. And, you know, if there are people that are having a hard time overcoming certain barriers in their life, you know, perhaps you could be exactly what they need to help kind of go through that process and figure out, and let's remove these barriers and help people out. So where can people get in touch with you? Where can they find you? Anything you want to plug in right now, and I'll make sure to share the links and everything as well on my website, my social channels, but let us know where people can find you.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much again for this. This has been a wonderful opportunity. And I noticed halfway through, a thought that came into my mind was, even though we've been going for an hour, it feels like we're like 0.1% into the conversation.
Yes.
So there's so much behind it. But I hope that some aspect of this was useful. And before I, you know, share anything, I'd love to just kind of give a general recap as well as I can, just kind of in the moment.
Of course, please.
Everyone listening right now, your life, that's already something not to take for granted. You have something that's on your heart. You know, Wayne Dyer's got this beautiful quote, you know, don't die with your music still in you. You know, you've got your music. You've got that thing that's on your heart that you would love to do. You would love to share. You'd love to give. You'd love to contribute. For somebody, it's you want to open up the ice cream shop, the pizzeria, the arcade. For somebody else, you want the big, you know, massive Fortune 500 company and everything in between. You know, you want to be the amazing father and mother. You want to be whatever it is, you want to be a better leader for your team, a better child to your parents. But whatever it is, if you were to just raise your level of commitment and increase your level of presence and engagement with that person, whether it's a spouse, a teammate, a parent, whatever, a child, their experience of you would change immediately. You would start to get closer with your kids. You get closer with your partner, your team would start to feel so much more love and attention from you and that you care. And they're going to start being more motivated and feel inspired by you, and that they can come to you if they need something. Like everything improves when you just actually start living your life from this paradoxical place of I'm going after living another like 50 plus years and I could die tomorrow. It's a balance between that. And so you have the plan, but you're not playing small. You're not coming from fear. If you're afraid, but it's something that you would like to do, do it. Jump into it. That's how the fear goes away. And so that, first and foremost, is what I hope people took from this, because that alone can and will change your life. And everyone pretty much has something that falls into that general idea, that if you just applied that, this would make a big difference. What's that conversation that you might really benefit yourself and the people you care about from having? As an example, hey, maybe someone's listening to this and they're early on in their career, and maybe it's like, I don't really want to do this, but I'm doing it because maybe family expectations, as an example. Have that heart to heart. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to understand, but have that heart to heart with these people that you seem to be afraid to disappoint, and let them know, if you're experiencing hell, if your life sucks, if you hate what you do, if you're every day you're waiting for Friday, and then Friday happens and you're finally happy, and then all of a sudden it's Sunday night before you know it, and now you got to go back.
Right.
If that's your life, I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I think Les Brown, the motivational speaker, talks about it from the place of you're committing spiritual suicide. And it's like, from that place, the people that care about you don't want that for you. And so you buying into the story that they won't understand, you know, you're assuming that it's worth trying. And coming from that place, maybe it's not a parent, maybe it's a spouse, you know, husband, wife, honey, you know, this is what's going on. I love you. I love us. And like, I'm not happy. And it's not us. It's what I'm doing. I need to change this. And I'll do it in as practical a way as possible to make sure the money works and all that kind of stuff. But I need to change. Like, can you support me with that? Like, make sure the people that care most about you, you're on the same team with them. Right. When everyone's on the same page, like, it's so much easier. But when you're in your head thinking about what they might say, you have no idea what they're going to say. And just like with that client story I shared with you with the guy, and he asked the woman out, and then now they're going to get married. It's like the same thing. You know, what if she says no? What if she says yes? You know, what if the people that you think won't understand, understand? Because you actually gave them the opportunity and the chance to hear you out, and then you heard out them, and now you both feel seen and heard and understood. Things work out so much easier from that when we're not lost in the story. So again, tune into your heart, slow down. Am I happy? And if I'm not, what seems to be in the way of that? What seems to be the cause of that? What, if it changed, would really be an improvement in my life? And then day by day, moment by moment, what can you do to start moving in that direction? Like, that to me is, I think, the probably, if memory is serving me, the overall idea that I was trying to get through. And again, if anyone has been listening to this and this has been inspiring to you, there's a few different ways that I could be of support. You know, one is if you really like content, podcasts, videos, blogs, all that, you can, you know, Braden will have the links, as he said, but you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Jamil Syed, DR, and then my name. Facebook is just my name, Jamil Syed. There's probably about 400 to 500 videos, blogs, all these things that I've been putting out for probably about 6 years. And I've been really fortunate to hear that it's been helpful for people. So hopefully that'd be helpful for you as well. There's an ebook I wrote called 20 Steps to Your Next Breakthrough. When I created that, I wanted it to be short, practical, and powerful. So there wasn't the excuse that it's some 500-page book, that it's too big. It's 76 pages, I think, and every chapter is like 1 to 3 pages. You can finish it in an hour, or you can read it like one, you know, lesson a day, let's say. But it's designed to move you from being stuck to being in momentum. It's kind of the foundation, I would say, of just like motivation, if you want to call it that. And some people, that's exactly what they need. And some people, they've got that. That's kind of the basics. And then they want more. And if they want more, my perspective is reading, listening, watching, that only gets you so far. At some point, the doing needs to happen. Right. At some point, there needs to be the, you don't want the, what they call shelf help. You got all the books on the shelf, but your life hasn't really changed much.
Right.
The application needs to happen. And so if this has resonated, if people are listening and they're saying, wow, I'd like to talk to this guy. I'd love to have a conversation with you. My gift to you, no charge for that. And you can book that on my website, jamilsyed.com. And in that call, we just get really clear. First, we just connect. Is it a good fit? Personalities, vibe. Do I like you? You like me? Awesome. And if that's the case, what would you love to experience? What would you love to create in your life? What are the results? What's the dream a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? What's your life look like? And then what seems to be in the way from your own perspective? And then we talk about that. And then once we get really clear, you know, do you want some help with that? And if you want my help, we do that, and it's beautiful. And if you want someone else's help, maybe I can point you in that direction, but at least you leave with a plan. And so that'd be a conversation I'd be open to having. And the final thing is, if there's any men who are listening to this, two partners of mine, separate, you know, kind of business, we run a men's mastermind, and it's called The Liberated Man. And, you know, there's a free Facebook group, tons of content out there for the last 6 months or so. If you go on Facebook, type in The Liberated Man, I'd be more than happy to accept you into that. And then you can enjoy all the content. And if you'd like to be in the mastermind, we can talk about that too. You feel free to reach out to me on Messenger, email, the website. It's all there.
Perfect. So we got tons of things. And again, for everyone who didn't write all that down or didn't have a pen handy, I will include links on that on my website and on the podcast show notes and everywhere else we put it. So lots of different ways to get in touch with Jamil, which is fantastic. And I know I'm extremely lucky, because I feel like I've been fortunate to be able to have a couple hours with you now in total, and hopefully more. Like you had said, this is just kind of 1% of maybe where this conversation would go. So perhaps we have to do 2% and 3% in the near future, but this has been awesome. So just quick, before I let you go, I want to do just, I love every person I interview doing a quick little rapid fire, if you will. And this is kind of a tricky question, but the Learn to Perform platform is built around the three core values of health, happiness, and performance, which are kind of vague, but I like to think of them as almost like a Venn diagram, and they all overlap a little bit, but you need all three of them to really kind of optimize your life. At least that's, you know, kind of the framework that I've liked to look at in life. So if you had to give one piece of advice of something someone can do to optimize their health, to optimize their happiness, and then to optimize their performance, so three different pieces of advice, one for each, what are some things, just some quick hitters that come to mind for you?
Same answer for all three. Be yourself.
Be yourself. I love that. Okay.
And real quick, that unfortunately has become cliched. And so many people hear that and they go, oh yeah, be myself. I know that. but you're not being that. And right. So that's the challenge. Like, I hope that people, if they listen to this again, or if they're just thinking about it, it's like, don't just think, oh, wow, you know, that was a good nugget right there. That was some good information. I took some good notes. That's information. You want transformation. Transformation only happens through action, through doing, through who you're being. And so again, be you, be yourself is the greatest advice I think you could ever get from anybody. And the thing is, like, it's like, what's in the way of your health? What's in the way of your happiness? What's in the way of, what was the third one?
Your performance.
Performance. Yeah. So it's like, all right, be yourself. Well, who are you? That's a whole different conversation, but a real short version of it. You know, you're this moment. You're not your past. That's a memory. And you're not your future. It doesn't exist. You're this moment. So if you're in your head and you're not present, you're not being you. You're like identifying with your thoughts. You're not being you. If you're not happy, it's because you're not living a life on your terms. It's because you're not living an authentic. That doesn't mean that like you're positive thinking, your head's in the sky, like you're not living the dream life. I mean, like, you're not living a life that's authentic to you. Like, right. You could have like zero to no possessions and be the happiest guy in the world, because the happiness doesn't come from what's outside of you. So are you being yourself? Are you playing your own music, like that Wayne Dyer quote? You know, are you going through your moments just truly at peace because you're being yourself? You know, meditation, I know this is a rapid round, so
No, that's okay.
Like, meditation to me isn't something that you do. It's something that you're being. It's a meditative state. I personally, and I've worked with this, you know, for the last like 16 years or so, but most of my days I'm in meditation. But it's not like something special about me. Anyone can do it. That's who you actually are. When you're fully present in the moment, no matter what you're doing, you're in meditation. When you're fully engaged in what you're doing, you could be dancing, you could be singing, you could be drawing, you could be cooking. You're in meditation. You might not call it that, but that's what you're doing. And so in that same way, that's you being fully present. In that space, there is no anxiety. In that space, there is no depression. In that space, there's just peace. In that space, you're here now. And so when someone goes, how can I improve my health? How can I improve my performance? And how can I improve my,
happiness. Yeah.
It's like, just be yourself as the foundation for all of it. The happiness improves. Biologically, the health improves.
Definitely.
Because if you're stressed out all the time, well, it's like, well, why are you feeling this stress? Going back to like the irrational fear. You know, maybe you're feeling the stress because you're living a life that's inauthentic to you, and you're feeling pressured to perform at a certain level, and you think you have to, and there's consequences if you don't, and some people aren't going to like it if you mess up, and all that kind of stuff. And all that is just based on you living somebody else's version of your life. And that's negatively impacting your health. That as stress goes up, your immune system's tanking, your inflammation markers are going up, your breathing is changing, like everything is shifting. You're aging yourself prematurely. And so just by being you, everything across the board improves.
Wow. That's a fantastic articulation. Cause I was trying to understand a little bit more on my end as well. So that was awesome. So Jamil, thank you so much for this. This has been an incredible conversation, and I've gotten a ton out of it. And I'm fortunate because I know going through editing and preparing, I'm going to get to listen to it two or three more times. So hopefully I'll really be able to hammer in everything, but thank you so much for your time. And I hope that we can reconnect and do it again in the future.
Thank you so much, Braden, and thank you to everyone who tuned in. I appreciate you.
To discover more, this episode with all citations is available on the website, and you can also contact me on social media with any questions or comments. If you found this episode useful or think that it may help someone else, I encourage you to pass it along. Thank you all for joining me on this journey to lifelong health, happiness, and higher performance. And remember, always be grateful, love yourself, and serve others.